All right, hi, and welcome to episode 6 of the Writer's Block podcast. I'm totally not Natalie. My pronouns are she, her.
My name is Betty LaFlame. My pronouns are she, her.
My name is Everdus in Utopia. My pronouns are he, him. And we have our guest.
And today we have a super awesome guest. If you want to introduce yourself, Hannah.
Hi, my name is Hannah Slama. I prefer no pronouns, but you can kind of use whatever. It's fine.
Cool. We will try to refer to you as just Hannah, which is an awesome name.
Just Hannah.
Yeah. Awesome. Is that like the foil to Totally Not Natalie? It's just Hannah.
Totally Hannah.
Totally Hannah. Yeah. Absolutely Hannah.
New alt.
Real Hannah Slama.
Definitely, absolutely.
No one else. Why would you ask?
Okay, 100% Hannah is pretty cute.
I mean, I was proud of the line earlier, yeah, which was just, I saw Betty LaFlame in La Flesh.
Yes.
I'm so happy about that one.
I do think
that's really great. That's a good one. Yeah. That was funny.
And of course, it's less good now because I'm bragging about it, but you know.
Okay, today we're going over Hannah's script, Prego Seahorse Boy Wants to Get Twirly With You. Hannah, would you like to start off telling us a little bit about the script?
Sure. So I usually like all things dark and demented, but this one is definitely sweeter. It started when I heard some people just vocally wishing that there were more subby mon boy scripts. And I'm like, well, I like subby boys and I like monsters. I can do this. Even though, you know, it's normally more depraved. So this one is pretty sweet, actually. Like, a lot of people like it just because the character is very, like, eager. And there's lots of seahorse facts. I know you want to talk about that.
Yeah.
And it started particularly, I started seriously brainstorming when I got into a conversation with the lovely Sprung X one day.
Shout out to him.
Yeah, he's so adorable. Such a good source of inspiration.
He really,
really
is,
good
yeah.
person to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, just, he really
like,
is.
And so I asked like a couple of things, especially since he was interested preliminarily in filling it even before I wrote it, which is a very nice compliment. Also, his voice is so adorable.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, is it okay if we like have the tail do this thing? You know? If I have one person promising to fill it, I want to make sure that they're okay with all the
yeah.
weird tails.
Yeah.
And we basically went from there. I got good notes out of that conversation. I went and did a bunch of research on seahorses.
That was a great point.
Seahorse.
We can call the sequel Rehorse, right?
Yes.
But, yeah,
Rehorse, Too Horse, Too Furious.
Oh my God. You can have another few thousand babies. So that's basically how it came together. And then once I started writing, a thing that I like and I think is pretty cohesive through my scripts is I have a really good idea of like who the character is. Mm-hmm. And so that makes writing it a little bit easier. It makes the tone pretty consistent. And I can just think about like what this character's motivations would be throughout, what type of decisions they would make, and like what tone they would use, the things that they would say, particularly like to a partner or an audience, because we're talking about audio porn. So that's basically the origins.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to hear that. It's, I think, very similar to the way I start to write, where I'm a very character first driven writer.
Same, honestly.
The tags and like what they would do come later. I have to have an understanding of the character first, and then I kind of go into the script details.
Yeah, I like having a few tags just to guide the story or like an idea of what I want to do. But for sure, multiple times I've started writing and my character decides they want to do something different. And I'm just like, well, all right, then.
And obviously to our listeners, like it's not like a big deal if like this isn't your writing process. I mean, we had Shauna last time who does tags first, you know, everybody does different stuff. But it's interesting to definitely see like a wide variety of people and how they write and everything. I don't know where I'm going with this. But...
I think there's a similarity.
Yeah.
Aspect of it, because Hannah came up with this idea by talking to people, and I think a lot
yeah.
of my best writing ideas
yeah.
have come about because I was talking to people in this community. I'm like, oh, that's a great idea for a script, and then I write the script or someone else does. Like, when we were talking the other night, I think some people were suggesting that we do jerk-off instruction script, but it's Bop It. Which
yes, we were talking about that.
Oh my god, I've literally talked about this too.
See, oh my god,
there's a need.
That's so funny.
There's a desire and a need.
Yeah, there is an audience. You see a need, fill a need, quite literally.
So I talked about it, like, in my local kink community, and there's somebody who, like, really does identify as free use. I know that that's a little whimsical in our community, but the kinksters who are into it, like, very much know what they like, and, like, they were like, what if people just use me, like, a whole group? And I'm like, what, do you want to be, like, a party favor? And then, like, we ended up talking about a bop it, and I'm like, okay, but you have to make all the noise, and we could, like, do different things to your body.
That'd be amazing. Oh my god.
So if any of the, because not everyone's US-based, if anyone international is not familiar with Bop It, it's a children's game where you have to, like, press buttons in the order that it directs you to press them. So you can bop it when you have to hit one button, or you twist it when you have to hit another button, or you pull it when you have to hit another button. And it sounds really erotic now that I'm describing it out loud.
Yeah.
It's like, no wonder Simon, I turned out to be
kinky,
right?
As fuck. Yeah. I will include a video of Bop It just in case anybody...
Bop It in the show notes, right?
I think it's also awesome that this script came about from discussions within the community. My first ever interaction with the Totally Not Natalie was in a work study VC where I finished two scripts. One of them was because, from a conversation that Nat and I were having, it was right before New Year's, or maybe even before Christmas, I can't remember, because it was after the whole pace spin debacle, and we were talking about that, and Nat was telling me about the New Year's script that she was writing, and I was like, hey, have you ever thought about, like, what if, you know how people do countdowns for, like, countdown to orgasm? Like, what if, like, you count down to orgasm, but you're, like, you're also counting down to the new year, you know? And that was the New Year script that I wrote this past year. So yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I really love about this community, is that ideas literally can come from everywhere. Several of my scripts, in fact, come from the same thing. It's just from things people have said. Or, yeah, ideas we thought up like this. I mean, yeah, we just are talking about doing a Bop It script in here. Like, it's kind of amazing in that way.
See, that just makes me want to pervert the lyrics to Auld Lang Syne and help you with the script.
That would be amazing. Definitely.
Yeah, I also had the privilege of, like, being, I think, in a VC with you while you were working on the script, Hannah. And that was just awesome to see, because you're very... One, I know that you tend to have a writing style where you like having other people around while you write, because it makes it more entertaining for you, and it's just really fun to kind of bounce ideas off you when I'm listening to you or seeing you write, and how excited you get about it and how fun it is.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for saying that. I do remember that you were there during the working session where I did most of the, like, bulk of the script. And I definitely do. I love working with other people. I think you might be the only other person that has, like, more overall collabs in every area than me. And I love that for you. Because it's not a title I'm going for, right? I just like working with other people. And it helps motivate me. Honestly, like, I write scripts with people or with people around much faster than I do on my own. Like, lots of my scripts have been in my, like, idea document for literal, like, year or two at this point. And it's if someone else feels, like, excited or enthusiastic about it that I, like, get motivated to actually go in and write it. Or something completely different that comes out of the blue. And I'm like, yep, let's do it right now.
That was actually a big thing I noticed about this script. I think this is the first one that we've had where it was in like, any form, like, a very collaborative effort, right? Like, where you had a credited brainstorming partner. I was going to ask, do you have any tips for anybody else who is thinking about, you know, brainstorming with friends and, like, how they might be able to get more out of something like that?
Sure. So at this point, I just like talking to people because I love the communities that I am in and draw a lot of inspiration from everyone that I work with, because everyone is so talented, right? And I just really like having those convos, like, what are you into? Like, what pushes your buttons? What revs your engine? Like, what do you wish you saw more of? And, like, finding a need and filling it. Like, I want to make, like, dirty jokes because that sounds pretty gross, but, like, honestly.
What bops your bop it, basically.
Right. What bops your it. But I just feel like, you know, I do a lot of niche shit, and it's just because if I realize something isn't out there, I want to do it, and I have the confidence to do it, and that was definitely the case with Seahorse Boy. I figured there would at least be one or two,
or like a mermaid boy that was like similar, but really no. Wow. Whenever I get an idea for something really niche, I usually research and see what else is out there first. Because I want to be careful not to step on toes, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Unless it's just a really common theme, you know, like I'm not gonna search DDLG if I'm writing a daddy script. Like that's fucking insane. Yeah. But like a seahorse boy, if there would have been scripts out there, I would make sure and read it and make sure I was doing something different. That way I didn't, you know, duplicate work, basically. And I think that that's kind of the way to go. So yeah, just talking to people, asking them what gets them excited, and asking if they want to work on stuff with you. I mean, I already said I love working collaboratively, and I'm not shy to ask the question, you know, do you want to write this together? Or would you like to help me with this? Because to me, that's not even really a proposition. It's just like, are you as excited about this as me? Would you like to contribute? And that's what I want to make sure. And like, it's so funny that you called this like a collaborative work, because like definitely in the brainstorming, for sure, I got so much from working with Sprung, and that's why I was so happy that he filled it in the end, because we had worked together and I had his buy-in all through it. But like, just working collaboratively itself, is so much better to me, just like we have beta readers, right? And we have people that we want to lay eyes on our work before we release it into the wild, for the most part, because we want people's input. Like, it's nice to hear other people's opinions. Y'all are pretty smart.
It was actually one of our mailbag questions, since I don't know what order we're doing this in, but somebody did ask about in the anonymous Google form, so I don't know who this is, but it's a good question. How do you find beta readers?
Me personally, I have now been around enough, that I can just ask, you know, quote unquote favors from friends, because I know people's kinks and stuff well enough now that I pretty much know if it would be up their alley. It also helps that I'm more than willing to reciprocate. If someone asks me to beta read, it is the very rare day when I say no, because I think that it's really important and I really like it, you know, like I'm not just a writer. I'm also a member of the community, and I like, I'm invested in making it better. I mod Script Guild, for example. So that's all part of like what I see as my duty to the community, because I get so much out of it. I want to give back too. Right. But there's definitely places like even on Script Guild, you can make a post and say, hey, can I get some feedback on this? Like, that's totally fine to do. People do it all the time, and they get good feedback either in DM or in comments. And that's doable. Or there's like a couple of different community servers that people can go on and ask for beta. Do you guys do something differently?
Yeah, pretty much. I like exclusively will post either on a Discord server, or I will talk to my other friends and be like, hey, free to beta this or something. And yeah, also same, Hannah, like I am very, I think like the only time that I've ever said no to betaing is like, I'm busy right now, but I can do it later if you want me to, you know, like, and yeah, like for the exact same reason, it's just like, I have these skills to be able to like copy edit and help out with people, and like I see it, it definitely is like my way of giving back, so we are of the same mind on that as well. I think that's cool.
You also mentioned a thing real quick that I want to like emphasize the importance of, because I've accidentally hurt someone's feelings this way, and I feel like I've had my feelings hurt the same way. Is if you offer to beta for someone, make sure you're both in agreement on expectation of timeline, please, because for me it usually takes me a couple of days, especially if it's like an ad hoc request out of nowhere. Like, hey, can you read this? My response is yes, but it will take me a day or 2 days or whatever. And even being one day outside of that before I've gotten a message from someone that, you know, it really like made me sad because they were disappointed in me because they said that it hurt their feelings that I didn't get to it in the time frame that I promised. And so like, that's really important that everybody be on the same page, because there's a lot of people that want someone to put eyes on it right now so that they can post it. And I totally get that. But I feel like that's like the GWA version of like sub frenzy, right? You just like want to get it up and want to get it out there and want people to get their eyes on it and whatever. And it's like, there is no real rush in our community, but I totally understand the excitement. My thing is, I will 100% beta read for you. Just take me at my timeline. Like, setting that expectation is really important.
I prefer definitely just to look at scripts like right then and there, mostly just so I don't forget to do it. But, like, yeah, so that's almost always why I'm like, I can't do it right now, because I know I won't be able to just sit down and do it right then.
Yeah, I think it's also important to get clear on, obviously, on both sides, what you want the beta reader to do, and if you're a beta reader, what you absolutely want to get done, because people want different stuff with beta edits. It's importantly, and I think we've talked about this before, beta editing does not complement the author time, although most of us probably will compliment you too. It's, we're trying to help you make this what you want it to be. So let us know what you want the beta reader to do, and then asking from that
what
they should do.
Thank you for saying that, Natalie. That's also something that I think is really important, along with like time frame, is the person asking for beta, ask for what you want. Because if you want a super red pen, like for my red pen, I go to Lemons, right? Like, she is my red pen. If I just need somebody to eviscerate my grammar and tell me everything I did wrong, whereas someone else, I might be like, hey, does like the story flow of this feel right to you? Or does this character feel authentic? Like, what do you feel about this choice that they made three quarters of the way through? Or even just more general things, like, can you make sure the tone is consistent throughout? Or do you feel like the pacing is good? Like, does it read as one coherent beginning to end, you know, story or narrative? Because all of those things are important. And so I try to have the like foresight as a creator to ask for what I need whenever I'm asking for feedback or constructive criticism. Because if not, I think we all know, if you just ask for a beta reader or a beta listener, if it's an audio type thing, like, a lot of people will just say, it was great. And guess what you got? You got a thumbs up and nothing else.
Yeah, nothing else.
And that's nice. It's nice when people like it, but that's not the point of beta reading. Like, the point of beta reading is to get constructive feedback that you can then take to like rework your piece and make it stronger, in my opinion. If I wanted someone to disagree with me, I would just put it up on Reddit because I don't really have a lot of people that are like, this is crap, you know? But I'm more concerned about making sure it's really good on the back end before I release it out to the public to make sure that it's good for them.
Yeah. It's the trial by fire kind of like the, you're literally like giving it to somebody and be like, do your worst kind of, you know, like, and if you're like, if you've, you know, what's good there in the script will stand the test of that, and what won't, then you want that to be out of your script before you post it, you know?
No, that's exactly right. Like, if people question something, the least you can do is look at it as a creator and question whether or not it's as strong as you think it is, right? Because if you ask someone for their feedback and they're saying, I'm not sure about this part, listen to them. That goes along with the whole like writing thing of just kill your darlings, right? Just because you really like a thing, if people are telling you it's not landing, listen to them. And that's part of like the respect you can give back to beta readers.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you have to take every single suggestion. If they have like 20 suggestions, maybe you could take 15 of the 20 if you disagree with them. But respecting them means taking them seriously.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to mention that the way that I usually beta read on both ends is either I send somebody a Google Drive link with the ability to comment, or vice versa, I ask for that back. Because I can do it like over text, like in Discord or a Reddit message, but it takes forever, because the reason my timeline is I can do this for you within a couple of days is I like to go line by line. Because I want to make sure that if I have a suggestion, I'll offer it to you. I'm not worried about being too nitpicky because I know I'm doing it from a good place. Right. So like, even if it comes across as overly constructive or overly critical, like if you ask me, that's kind of what you're going to get. But I'm going to be positive about the work overall, but I will say, hey, this sentence is pretty weak. Like, you might want to try something like this instead, and I'll give suggestions. I think that's a really big thing for beta readers too, is don't just say, I don't really like this part. Give a suggestion. If you're beta reading, you're probably also a writer. And so giving a suggestion is way more helpful than just saying, I don't like thing.
Yeah. And I also like would, in the like same line as like suggesting, I would say like, don't say it like you should do this instead. Say it like, this is how I would do this. Or like, maybe if you did this or something like that will be, I think, a lot better way to put it. Definitely don't be just like, definitely. Yeah. Don't just be like, this is bad and you should feel bad about it.
If someone beta reads like that for you, just don't talk to them anymore. You don't
need that kind of
negativity
anymore
in your life.
I would actually like, I, part of the reason I like this question a lot too, and I think Script Guild is a really good place for new writers to go, is I think beta readers are especially important for new writers, especially because, as we've talked about before, GWA is a very new type of writing for anyone who's involved, even if you're very, very experienced, because most people don't come into this ever having written audio porn before. And one of the most common mistakes I see new writers make is just they're not used to this idea that, like, the listener or the person who's going to be seeing this doesn't get the stage direction. Like, they don't get that part. So you need to make sure that you're describing what's going on well enough for the listener. And I see a lot of people where they use the stage direction as though it's being read when it's not for most of the audience.
Yeah, I think that's a big case of show, don't tell, right? Because, like, they're not reading those notes. A good example, if no one has heard of it before, is there's an old, like, spoof audio drama called The Gun in My Left Hand is Loaded.
I was just going to talk.
Go ahead then. It's your podcast. Go for it.
There's this podcast called, this audio drama called The Gun in My Left Hand is Loaded that talks all about how it literally, like, specifically does everything that you shouldn't do. And, like when you're recording audio, kind of just, like, as a learning tool, partly just, like, to show, like, for a goof and a gaff and a laugh, but also to, like, show as, like, a learning tool of what you shouldn't do, you know, and why. And it's hilarious. I really like it.
I will also say, I think we both know it from Magnus, right?
North of the Magnus archives, yeah.
From the Q&As on how they write.
Yeah.
And their Q&As are so good because they talk about writing horror specifically. So I won't, like, fixate on that. But I will say, tools like that, tools like listening to that audio drama, which is supposed to be an example of what not to do, I still heard things that I was like, oop, I do that. But guess what? I don't feel bad about it. Because our medium is also fantastical. Like, it is theater. It is drama. So if you decide to go against a, like, quote-unquote professional opinion or, like, what not to do, do it deliberately. There's definitely someone in the literary world that has a really great quote on that. But for me, I just think about, as much as I love Strunk and White, I disagree with a ton of their, like, grammatical and writing edicts.
I think
really important to know them, right? Because then you know what you're disagreeing on purpose and why, and that strengthens your style.
Yeah, we'll have a separate episode.
We will, because I have many thoughts about Strunk and White. Hannah, have you ever read Style, 10 Lessons in Clarity and Grace by Joseph M. Williams?
No, I haven't, but will you send me a little linky link in our DMs, baby?
I will, absolutely. Thank it you. Is my personal preferred style manual. I like it more than Strunk and White. Elements of Style. I think it's important even to bring him up for the podcast, is because he does talk about that, about rules that you should ignore. He has three types of rules for English. He has, like, the necessary ones where, like, you need to have this, otherwise, like, you won't even know what's going on, you won't know what's happening, in order to have the language work, basically. The second one is rules that you can break depending on the situation, you know, like, for instance, like, putting but at the beginning of a sentence or something like that. And then the last group is what he calls folklore, which is just like, this is just not even a rule, don't pay attention to this, you know, things like that. And yeah, absolutely, like, I do think, yeah, you need to know the rules to break them
with intent, right?
Yeah, absolutely. With intent is a good way to put it.
I always want to bring everything back to Satanism, right? Like, and as Lucifer one does, Morningstar, right? What, like, he's the adversary in that story of Christianity because he knew the rules and he broke them deliberately because he thought it was the right thing to do. So just taking that and being able to, like, reclaim that feels, like, so powerful in any artistic medium. Like, not to tell your business or be like, I'm gonna go back to the script now, but, like, I went and looked at my own script just now while you were talking, and, like, just a few lines in, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 sets of ellipses in one line. And guess what? That's horrible, grammatically speaking, and, like, English speaking and writing speaking. But in audio, it works because that shows the performer how to pace it and where to put the pauses. Yeah. And rather than putting our relationship, pause, our life together, pause, our love, pause, it just makes me so pause twirly. Just put some ellipses, you know what I mean? Yep. Like, it's about your audience. You have to write for the people that you know are listening. And I mean that, like, both in how you construct your script and, like, we were talking about with the, you know, like, the, like, stage directions and stuff not being known to the listener. And also knowing that it is meant to be listened to. not just performed. Mm-hmm. Like you're writing something so that eventually someone will listen to it. And that's the part that I think is hard to explain to newbies. Yes. Because they write what they want to hear. And I'm like, it's not quite that though.
That's,
you know?
No. Yeah. What you're talking about is, the like post-process writing, which is like my, like, that's the thing I'm like most obsessed with, where you like, you as the writer, the creator, have to center yourself or like post, like put yourself into position with your audience, which in this case would be the performer, and then the world, which would be the listeners, you know, like you have to consider that all of these angles, you know, and like lines between them, in order to make a good script. And like, it's mostly just like, honestly, it's mostly just guesswork. But as you do it more, you become better and better at guessing, you know?
It also helps, I think, listening to the performances. I learn something from every performance I listen to of just, okay, here's what they were getting here. Here's what I'm understanding here. And the thing that I think attracted me to audio writing, besides the collaboration aspect, which we've talked a little bit about, which is awesome, is that it really makes the written word lyrical and poetic, even if it's not necessarily poetry, because people speak in a certain rhythm. And when you can get a performer to speak in that just like kind of naturalistic rhythm that is how people talk, it just, it feels beautiful because it feels natural.
Nat teaches how to do smut in iambic pentameter.
I've done that too, actually. Well, not smut. I wrote a whole fucking, I think, one act play in iambic pentameter because I was in AP English and also a huge tryhard always. And the assignment wasn't to write it in iambic pentameter, but I was with like high school boyfriend who was the same as me and my high school best friend who was the same as me.
Yeah.
So we just did so much extra TM and wrote the entire thing in iambic pentameter.
Funnily enough, you sending me that and saying the, like, especially the age when you wrote it, because you sent me a few excerpts of that, I'm like, okay, if Hannah can do this when she was in like eighth grade, I can do it now. And that just
I was a junior in high school, but thank you for thinking that eighth grade me could do that.
that's amazing.
But yeah, that's cool. What inspired me, and I think that's another community aspect of just like seeing other people write makes you think, okay, I can do this too.
Yeah, when I was home last summer, I was hanging out with my high school ex-boyfriend because he and I are still friends and we're still close. And I was like, do you still have a copy of that? And he was like, you know I do. I never delete shit. And I'm like, send it to me. And so that's how I was able to share it.
Not me creating an entire like hero story and having my friend illustrate the entire thing.
So it's okay. So inspirational. I was actually thinking, Betty, whenever you were talking about those different like ways to view yourself or center yourself as a writer, which number one, not to like just continuously be like, send me resources, ho, but like also, can you send me that? But two, like, I love that because I try to write in a way that the first person I really want to read my work are performers because I want them to be the most inspired by it. Right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily because I want fills, but because I want, if someone's going to read it with the intent of thinking about performing it, I want them to hear how they're going to say it in their head. So that's how I try to write. Not with like robust stage directions. Like I have almost none. Like I'll be like moaning or something every once in a while. Because like I know how I am as a performer, right? I know like both sides of the game or whatever. And like I don't like a lot of stage directions. I take them, ball them up, and throw them in the garbage. Sorry, not sorry. I love you, fellow scriptwriters, obviously. But I'm not gonna do every single thing you tell me to do. Not even in lines. And so I try to write in that way too and be really open to people doing their own interpretations, but like I want them to hear their own voice performing it when they read it. And that's why I try to like pace it. And you guys know, like I do like line by line separations and stuff. No matter how long those lines are, if that line is one person giving like a five sentence paragraph
on
like how they really feel. Oh my God. No, that's Natalie.
out.
I could not. Okay. But like, whether that's like a 5-sentence paragraph on like how they really, really feel about a thing, that is what I still consider a line, right? Because that's a thing that they're looking at as a cohesive whole. And then they're moving on to the next thing that they're going to say. And so that's why I'm not shy of like those ellipses or like adding some fucking hyphens in the middle of a sentence. Occasionally I'll use like a semicolon just to show off. But like, I want someone to hear their own voice reading it when they, or their own voice performing it when they read it, because that's who I'm writing it for. I love when community members read it and they're like, oh, I like that a lot. But like, if they're not planning on performing it, it doesn't mean as much. It's not like the correct audience, you know?
That's actually how I get to like, this is a script that I want to fill, is like that feeling of like, oh, I can read this script out loud in my own voice and it like feels right. Like that's how I get from reading a script to going like, oh, I want to record this.
Exactly. It's like, can you hear yourself reading it? Or can you hear yourself performing it? Can you insert yourself in this character? Yeah. And I think that's why too, right, Betty, like we talked about, is that I also write very character centric. And so if someone can not only connect with the character, but like feel their own rhythm when they read it, that's the goal. And I think that's how you get fills, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it also, as a fellow stage direction minimalist, I also find that, like, because I put in less stage direction, performers are a lot better at recognizing that when I do put in, like, pause here or pause a little bit more, they're like, oh, that one's important, because there's not a lot of them. So it helps get, like, I think the broad strokes I want to across better, because it's just, like, they only have to pay attention to one or two very specific things that they're supposed to do during the script, which is fine if they ignore two, but it's nice to kind of have that. Oh, you don't have to do 25 things. You just have to do 3.
Yeah, can I say something real saucy?
Yeah.
Sure. Most people are script writers. They are not directors, and therefore they should not try to direct.
Interesting.
That's fair. Absolutely. Yeah. I think.
See, I have directed, and I still do not try to direct unless that's something that's asked of me, like for a big group project. But like, that's why I don't give a ton of stage direction. That's why I just try to focus on making the story, making the lines, making the dialogue, making the character as dynamic as possible, because that's what will draw people in. And then I want them to put their artistic flair on that. I want them to do their own interpretation. Like, that's the goal. I've been very clear since day one, you know, change whatever you want, with the exception of, like, I don't know, my own personal limits as far as tags go. Don't add those, please. But anything else, like, yeah, fuck yeah, take it and make it what you want and transform it. I've run into so few people that are like, do not change my work. And I get it. I respect it. But also I think that the, like, seeing fills as a collaborative, like artistic expression rather than someone bringing your work to life, is that's the difference there.
I like that.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah, I think it's a distinction we can also use for future podcasts, because I'm interested to hear what people think on it and how they approach it.
Absolutely. We've talked about stage directions like a couple times on this podcast, and now I'm self-conscious because I don't know where I land on how many stage directions I do. I think I am kind of more minimalist, as Nat says, but
I mean, there are other ways. There's some, I know some script writers who do, one of which does this, I think, extremely well, and I'm hoping to have them on the podcast later, where they do have every single line just planned out in terms of what they want the listener to do or performer to do. But this person, I think, and I think this can, if you're very good at it, does it extremely well, where they're just, you get what the exact scene is supposed to look like. It's just the beautifully painted picture, and it still leaves room for improv, because there's still ways you could take it. But yeah. So I don't think there's necessarily a better or worse way to do it, but there is, I think, different pros and cons that speaks for both.
Yeah, no, for sure. And like I said, from the, you know, performer side, to peek behind the curtain, because I don't know if you guys knew, but I do that too. I've been around forever. Here's a free segue if you want it. I've been around forever, and the role of scriptwriter used to not exist. Therefore, I am, you know, first and foremost, at least historically and chronologically, a performer. And that's why I'm willing to say, put as many stage directions as you want in that. But as a performer, if I don't want to do them, I'm just going to disregard them. You know what I mean? And I feel like as a writer, as a creator, putting things out there and specifically allowing those changes, you have to be ready for that too. I've definitely had some people, I think, get their feelings hurt, not directly in what I have done as a performer, but I've heard other writers be like, oh, so-and-so changed my script without asking. And, you know, I really didn't like that. And I'm like, have you tried like telling them that, you know, like just having a little bit of communication? Way, if they want to fill your stuff in the future, then they know that you didn't really like that. Or have you tried like pre-communicating what type of changes you're open to? Because like I said, personally, as long as it doesn't fall under my personal limits, which are like age with a non-consenting, like non-consenting age person, or beast with a non-consenting animal, or like exploitative incest, like those are my limits. If you don't add those three things, you can do pretty much whatever you want to do with my script. Like, this is an open offer for everyone always. And I'd love to see it. Like, let me see what you come up with. But not everyone feels that way. And so I think people being more specific about what they're offering as script writers would be helpful too.
That makes sense. Absolutely. Do we want to get into that? Do we want to talk about the beginnings of GWA from your perspective?
Sure. I'm down. You had a couple of questions, right?
Yeah, I think it was on the podcast link, but I think generally it was, I'm going to actually find this because I don't want to hear Betty say something.
Okay. Hannah, I think you're really awesome. I like your script a lot. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh my God. Betty, I think you're really awesome. I like your face a lot and all your scripts.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on your
thank
podcast.
Thank you. We should collab. I don't know why we haven't collabed.
I'm surprised.
Dude.
Are we?
I know, right? I'll send you my ideas in progress doc, and if anything catches your eye, you know, we can definitely do it as a collab. I'm way open to that. And I think that would be a fun, like, almost in podcast thing. Like, if you're like, oh, by the way, I looked through the list, this one I want to do. Like, that would be cute.
That would be fun.
Love that for us.
Love that for us.
Okay. So this is the thread, and we're not cutting that out because you both are adorable. For the last podcast, so Escape Terrorist asks, and this is all public, so this is why I'm saying people's usernames. Okay, the part about vintage scripts, which we talked about last episode, makes me think it would be cool as fuck to hunt down an original retired writer, which we can't obviously bring up anyone who's deleted
their
account.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
We can look at people who have left and would like to be on the podcast, so if you're in that category and you're listening to this, we're happy to
absolutely get in contact with us. Yes. Yeah. But yeah.
Otherwise, we're not going to bother people who are no longer here because we assume that they don't want to be bothered.
Yeah. They probably left for a reason. Yes. So, yes.
But if there's anyone like Hannah who is here, we might have another GWA dinosaur, as Hannah refers to herself. So come on the podcast. But Escape Terrorist is asking about the evolution of GWA, and then Bort Incognito, which is a Simpsons reference, I think, asks, has anything changed in the last few years following this thread? It might be worth discussing this in the next recordings. I only started listening in, 2019. But I would say interest has initially doubled or tripled, probably with the pandemic during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say coming into it already was, a deluge as a straight man without a particular kink. It's just that more is produced, so that's what they're saying, is just, it's gone up in quality. But I don't know, Hannah, have you noticed any big changes from the time you started to now?
I mean, there's definitely been spikes in growth, so just let me actually go way, way back. hop back in the time machine, friends. Let's go back to the year 2013.
Whoa.
And that is
Do you want to know how old I was in 2013, Hannah?
I really don't, actually. I kind of have, a latent crush on you always, so please don't remind me of dating you.
Yeah.
Okay, so in 2013, I was an adult. And I was hitting that fucking not safe for work random subreddit generator that used to exist. I don't know if that's a tool that still is out there. And I came across GWA, and it was brand new. There were only a couple thousand subs, but it was people recording them doing sex stuff and posting it. And I was like, holy shit, this is fucking cool. When I was a teenager, I really liked fan fiction erotica. And then as an early 20s person, I was mildly interested in viz porn, but I couldn't really easily find things that were extreme enough for me, TBH. And so I was just I don't want to watch vanilla porn, back in 2013, because that's what's easy to find on the internet, and I don't want to dig deeper because that's scary. And so when I came across GWA, I was like, oh, this is great, though. It's someone's mouth just making sex noises into a mic. And that's what it's been since day one, that it is still what it is today. And I like that there's a really healthy dose of respect, where people are like, it doesn't matter if you fill scripts, it doesn't matter if you're like a one, like, super detailed audio drama that happens to have a little bit of sex in it type producer, or if you're like, you know, an instructional person, like, whatever anyone does is appreciated. And it's very much that meme where it's like somebody makes a cake and they're like, oh, this isn't as good as this other person's cake. And then the audience is like, woohoo, two cakes.
Two
like,
cakes.
Literally,
yeah.
that's how GWA works, right? And that's how it's always worked. There has never been somebody being like, oh, we're doing too much of this or too much of that. And if they are, they're just being whiners, just honestly. Make the content you want to see. Anyway, so, but for the first several years, I would say at least until 2015 or 16, scripts were not a popular offering because people didn't really think of it that way. Well, that was the first 2 years or so, right? It was mostly ramble faps or like I have an audio that is lost to the annals of time where I used to work at a like private care facility overnight. So there was no one there and it was super quiet. And I did a whole like walk through like medical JOI semen collection. Right. And that's lost because I torched all of my old content whenever I left in like 2015 or something to get married, which don't do that. That's a big mistake. But
wait, leave or get married. I just want to like clarify which to not do. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
So, wow. That was a thing that I did.
I mean, as a year for you must have been, and I apologize for that.
oh man, we won't do that on this podcast, okay. But that's for some therapy podcast somewhere. basically, up until like 2015 or 2016, like scripts just weren't really a thing because people were just doing like ramble faps or like real sex audios. Or like just masturbation. Even when I went on hiatus, when I did firebomb all my stuff because I was in a monogamous relationship, and I thought that was the thing to do. Again, please never do that. I'm sad that I did. Don't. I made an alt, and with that partner's permission, I posted completely anonymous ramble faps. So I would just turn on the audio and masturbate and post that under an alt. And that kind of sated my still being, you know, connected to the community and still contributing while not like identifying myself at all, especially not as Hannah Slamma. Right. And then I came back in 2018 and some very lovely people, most of all, let me shout out, Late Stage Infernalism and Cardinal Sen, who are two very incredible friends of mine, incredible people. And amazing writers. And they are both people that told me, you are a writer, you need to just write. And encouraged me and collabed with me and basically pushed me because I came from that place where I didn't have to write. And I thought personally, on a personal note, I said this a week or so ago because someone asked a very similar question on Script Guilds where I was like, previously, honestly, I thought that I could only write from a place of pain. Like, that's what motivated me the most and what I was able to just put on the page. And I'm so happy and grateful that through GWA, especially in, you know, the more current iteration, whenever I came back in 2018, that I can put down on paper things that bring me joy and things that are very erotic, because I thought that that only had the connotation of pain for me. And so I'm not only happy that I could rejoin the community and start doing, you know, performances again, but also that I'm now able to write. Because I knew I always had that in me, but it was just such a literal painful connotation that I didn't want to tap into it. And it took a lot of support and a lot of, encouragement and collaboration from my fellow scriptwriters.
It's honestly, I was talking about this and I think, one of the, Discord channels that we're mutually a part of a while ago, but not that long ago, like a week ago, feels a long time ago. But
just, long ago in DWA time.
Yeah. DWA land where everything is dog years. save the line. But
okay.
One of the things that I've always liked about the GWA community, in part, I think I've mentioned this before, I was always too afraid to write any type of fiction before I joined a GWA. It's the first time I really tried creative writing. And the reason that I like it is because, unlike most writing communities here, it's a really supportive one. It's not designed to tear anyone down. any type of criticism you do get is generally, for, at least in my case, all been very constructive.
Constructive, yeah.
No one out here is telling me I suck or that I shouldn't be writing. And that's just, it's such a great positive feeling to have of just, I can do this.
And make First of all, that's ridiculous to think that you're not worthy. Not, you're literally one of the highest quality writers I've ever come across.
Thank you.
And I didn't say in GWA, I just said one of the highest quality writers I've ever come across.
Fucking tweet, right.
Also, I went and while you were talking and I was listening, I found the comment I was talking about. This was on Script Guild and it just says, question for GWA writers, why do you do it? By Delilah Sweet, Delilah_Sweet on Reddit. And my comment was, when I came back a few years ago, I was performing only. I thought I'd lost my ability to write from anywhere other than a place of pain, which was my only previous inspiration. Late Stage Infernalism and Cardi convinced me to try, and well, they were right. I found I can also write from an erotic place. It's difficult and time consuming because I am a perfectionist. My mental health gets in the way constantly, so progress is slow, but I can do it, and I can do it well. And that brings me such joy these days, and likely always will. I've never come close to running out of ideas, only energy to make them happen.
Aww.
That's really beautiful. I think it's fantastic, not only that GWA has brought us all together, because I love and adore every single one of you, but also that it has kind of encouraged you both to become the amazing writers that you are. So that's really amazing, and I like that a lot.
That's a thing that I feel like gets a little bit overhyped in the like promotion aspect of our community, but truly, like, call out other people when they are the source of your inspiration and your support. Because that's what community is. And that's why I'm just saying people's names, because number one, I know they wouldn't mind. And number two, like, they're fucking inspiring. Mm-hmm. Like, Cardi and LSI are some of my closest friends, and they are so fucking inspiring to me. And I've collabed with them. I've relied on them. I've talked to them for years. And I think that those type of relationships are so pure and so good, especially in the writing community, because it's just like, not to sound too sapiosexual about it, but it's just like, hey, baby, you want to rub our brains together?
Fucking mood.
I mean, LSI did do a mind-fucking script, well, several, but we talked about one on the podcast, so.
I actually have a script about a brain in a jar, which is someone that's in between getting dissected and pre-transplant. And they're basically, like, going through the 7 stages of grief, but, like, make it sexy. And that's a thing that I've been working on for 3 fucking years. So maybe it'll get released at some point. I don't fucking know. I don't want to pretend like it. I'm George R. R. Martin, but like my production output is, you know, running similarly. Recently.
You're already doing better than he is. Don't worry.
It happened a lot. Oh yeah. It's only been 3 years, but still, like, sad. Like, I wish I could just go write it, but like, God, I just want to do it right. You know what I mean? So I open it up every once in a while, reorganize notes, write some dialogue, and then I'm like, that's kind of all I can do now. And I just put it away. So
it's a slow burn, but with you in the script.
Yeah, I have 2 modes.
I mean, brain. I am the brain. Yeah, let's make no jokes about that. I want to be dissected. I want to be the brain in the jar. That's where I'm writing from. Maybe it just gets too stimulating.
And yeah, I have 2 modes of writing. It's the type where I'm producing 2 scripts a week, and the type where I'm thinking, how the fuck was I producing 2 scripts a week? It's those two. Those are it.
I either write 3 scripts in a day, or I don't write for like a month. There is no in between. It's fine.
A script a month is really ambitious for my POV.
Yeah, I have no idea how people write so much content so consistently.
Don't you like write a new script every week? And it's
I don't like write it down amazing? Though.
Okay, but like
we talked about how performers are also writers. We're not gonna have this.
Yes,
debate again.
We're not gonna have this debate.
You already
again.
Covered one of your scripts.
I know, but I mean, like, you know what I'm saying, right? Like, the amount of like words that people have written down on a regular basis is pretty crazy.
I mean, I honestly feel that same way about performing, which I do occasionally, but I think Betty and I do it less than I think even Hannah, and definitely less than Evelyn, of just like, for me, performing is more draining than writing. So just anytime I'm about to perform, which I do enjoy doing, obviously, or else I wouldn't do it. It's just like, oh gosh. And it's just this big mental energy to get myself to do it and have that build up. And then once I'm done, it's obviously like, oh, this is like not bad. But then I forget it. And then the next time it's the same mental energy build up.
There is definitely something to be said about like the Band-Aid method, right? Of like just getting into content creation when you're experiencing a lull. It's just like, far be it from me to be like, oh, just do the thing, right? As a mentally ill person and like someone who is chronically out of spoons always. Like, if someone was like, oh, just go write, I would be like, go fuck yourself.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do in the writing too. So
it is. No, it totally is. I mean, well, yes. But like, you're also just supposed to, when you can, write. And the thing is that I want to like specifically elucidate is, it doesn't have to be perfect. And I say this like directly speaking to me, myself, and I, like I should have a mirror in front of me saying this, is it does not have to be perfect. Just get words on the page. Like that is the most important thing, because you can go back, you can edit, you can ask for beta readers, you can refine your process, you can just write notes if you want to, you can write a fucking outline, just write. Write when and where you can, I think, is like the expanded, better, more wholesome version of that.
I was actually pretty curious about that, because I did notice that you said that this was an idea that you had for the Seahorse Boy script.
I mean, that was sort of like an idea.
The reason we were talking about. Oh, right.
You did mention that.
We're doing great, guys.
We can, I guess this kind of segues into some of the questions.
Well, I mean, yeah, also Evelyn's been like good golden retriever and has been sitting on these very meticulous notes he has all podcasts.
They're not like super, okay, well, I did notice that you mentioned in the post that it was an idea that you had for a while and kind of couldn't get done. Would you say that like, kind of talking it over with somebody else helped you get that from like idea to concrete script?
Yes, for sure. So I like I said before, I like writing monsters, right? I like the monstrous and its many iterations. God, I just turned myself on with that. Okay, so when people started saying, oh, I wish there were more subby mon boys. I wish there were more subby mon boys. And I heard it like multiple times in the space of a few months. I was like, maybe I should dig out that Seahorse Boy script. Script idea, rather. Because I always like gender fuckery also, which I would love to get Nat in on after I finish this. But just, you know, queering gender and taking gender out of it or inserting it where people don't expect is a really big passion of mine. Because I... Surprise, surprise, let me come out on your podcast. I'm agender. I perform under the F tag. I mean, everyone that knows me knows this, but
it's more of a mock.
It's not actually a secret. Everyone that knows me knows this, but like I perform under the F tag just for simplicity, because people, when they're searching, they're not searching the A tag in front of the four. You know, they're searching it, you know, after the four because they want it to be more inclusive. So I want to be inclusive everywhere always because, number one, I don't have gender. But also I understand that my voice gets read as female. And honestly, that's fine with me. Recently, it's caused a tiny bit of dysphoria. But, like, I'm dealing with that in my own personal space. As far as a performer, it hasn't ever really caused me issue because I'm playing a character. Right? Like I'm putting forth a piece of content or I'm writing from whatever perspective.
Definitely.
That's basically where I come at it from. And so Nat, can we talk about gender and scripts and why it is not important?
Why gender script?
Let me just ask you a question on your podcast. How do you feel about gender, Natalie? And why does it not matter at all?
Oh god, I've had this talk with I think a lot of people individually. I respect gender tax for searching. I get that for some people they feel very violated if they, I think the most common one is they listen to, they're looking for a female voice and they accidentally hear a male voice. And I want to be respectful of those feelings, but at the same time, as a writer, it's one of those things where when I'm creating this work of art, I really don't care about the sound of the voice that fills it. I just want it to get filled by somebody. And if that person wants to be a femme, or somebody whose voice would be read as feminine, but they want to play where they're having a penis, that's fantastic to me. And it feels weird to me to be saying, no, you have to have a femme sounding voice to do this script. If you like the script, you can do it regardless of what your voice sounds like or what you identify as.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. I had something I was going to say and I can't remember what it was.
Think harder, Bet.
Thanks, Hannah. Yeah, definitely along the lines of what you both were saying is like, yeah. Oh, I remember it now. So listeners might know that I did a really big project at the beginning of the year that was called the One-Line Script, where I got a bunch of people like together, over 100, and did like a game of telephone with a script. Like I think I did the first line, which was just like, hi, please come in.
Did you participate in this? I thought it would be more like robust, and I was like, I don't know if I can do it. And you're like, literally, I need one line. And I was like, oh, okay.
Also, somebody.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did.
Somebody just did. Sorry, what sounds is their line too? Which was,
yeah, that was Meg.
One, yeah.
Yeah, Avalon was actually line number 69, which just worked out. That was before we really even knew each other. Isn't that awesome? But okay, the reason I bring that up is because like somebody asked me like really early on, like, what are the gender tags going to be? And I like hadn't even thought about it. I was like, it's going to be a literal like garbage pail of a script, like, or like a quilt, you know, like pieced together from like scraps, you know, like it's not going to be a, this is something where I think that just gender doesn't matter. You know, I said F or M just because I thought it was going to be the most accessible to people. But now I kind of regret it. Looking back, I should have done more like A for A. I've just been like, just don't be super specific about genitalia. Because like in the end, like the script is a complete mess. Like it doesn't matter like what the gender is. And I had people afterwards who were saying like, oh, we should totally flip this. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense. Like the script is, it's supposed to be just something fun and silly and like kind of transcends gender in that way, where it's just like embrace the man pussy, my friends. Like
I mean, it's one of those things where I want to be obviously respectful of people who solid, let's go with solid, and that doesn't sound right, less fluid, I don't know, something gender identity than I do, where I'm not like, I'm pretty open about like, you know, sexual preferences. I'm obviously happy to listen to anyone's voice, which is why I write for all genders. And I just have a wide variety of experiences. It's just, I wish that A for A content was a little bit more accepted, and that more content, or people were aware of how gender fluid content actually could be. Because one, we've talked about this before, it's really not that hard to flip. And really, sex is an emotional experience. You don't need to focus as much on particular genitals as you do the experience a lot of the time. And I think, Hannah, you once told me that one of your biggest compliments was, I couldn't even tell that the script was for A.
Uh-huh.
Did it so well.
Honestly, yes. I've wanted to hear both of your inputs. I've been literally over here chomping at the bit. I would like, as an agender person, obviously, like, degendering kink is a big fucking deal for me. And making it accessible to people and making it inclusive. And even the things that I write, the things that I write from a gendered perspective nowadays are because the fantasy I don't think would translate if it were not gendered. If it's possible to be degendered or agender, I absolutely write that way. Because to me, it's the eroticism of the scene. It's the dynamic between the two people. It's the touch. It's the taste. It's the feeling. It's everything that you should be doing as a writer. And honestly, if you say that not including the sex or genitals of one of your participants in the script is limiting to you, you need to be more creative. Sorry, not sorry.
Take this opportunity to grow as a writer. Push yourself.
Like I just said, I mean, think about, what does it smell like? What does the touch that someone's doing feel like? What are the emotions that you want to, elicit from this sensation? What are the things that you really want to say or hear that are not dependent on gendered terms? And I think when we shift to like looking at things that way, like what is the actual essence of what you want people to feel? That's when it's going to become more inclusive. Because like you, Nat, I had a hard time just being like, I'm just going to write A for A. Fuck it. And I'm not going to write only A for A because I don't want to limit myself. But anything I can write A for A absolutely is A for A. And for a reason.
Yeah, and it actually, like, there. I read scripts too for fun, as you do. And there are a lot of times where people do tag it because they want a certain voice where I'm like, this could just be for A. There's nothing in for that even references this person's genitals. They could just tag it for A if they wanted to, because it's really that easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that to me is a little bit selfish, honestly, and I don't mind saying it. If you really just wanted your work to be out there and people to fill it, you would be fine with flips and things like that. And if you're not, I have a little less respect for you.
I get that. I think to some of these people's credit, it's also like, I don't think that they're aware of the fact that they've written a script that's actually for A. They just haven't thought like that for their thought of, oh, I didn't mention genitals in this. I've had that mistake a couple times where I like in beta reading my own script, like to get it prepared for publication. I'm like, wait, this one's actually for A. Sweet. And then I tag it for A.
Yeah. Yeah. Avalon, I thought you were saying something earlier. Well, I would like to hear your perspective.
Yeah. We were talking about the feelings that you like to impart on people. And one thing I mm-hmm. like to ask in general when we talk about people's scripts on here is when you wrote the Seahorse script, what was the feeling that you were hoping to sort of impart on the listener with this one?
And why is it twirly?
Twirly. Literally, that's why. I had to invent a word.
Oh, because... is it a new feeling?
Love it.
Yeah, twirly. Twirly.
Love to see it.
I was going to ask where twirly and swirled came from, so please
that
continue.
Absolutely came from my own brain. Okay. That came wow. from me trying to suss out who a prego seahorse boy, or about to be prego, seahorse boy would feel. And I had some feedback, like we were talking about earlier, that people were like, I don't get twirly. I don't like it. I don't understand why you're saying it. And I'm like, but the character is saying it because that's the only way they know how to express how they feel. So I understand mm-hmm. that you don't understand it, but also like, that's just them trying to describe it. So like, they're still doing their best. Right. And yeah, like that's what I really like about this character is like, oh God, Seahorse Boy is so fucking cute. They love their partner. They're devoted. They are a house servant, basically. I also like to really normalize things that other people find kinky, right? Like having a boy at home doing all of your chores for you would be so kinky from like a F-dom point of view, if that's how you mm-hmm. wrote the script, right? Mm-hmm. But I just choose to make it that's what he wants to do, because that's mm-hmm. what works best for their relationship. Yep. And basically that, you know, like, I love Seahorse Boy's enthusiasm, and I love their intimacy with the listener, mm-hmm. because it's clear that they're very bold and they're very communicative, mm-hmm. and that they know what they like, and they're speaking from a place of certainty and security, which is like what all of us really want from relationships, right? Like, what if you were with someone that you could just be like, hey, I cleaned the whole house and I'm glad that you're home today and I just want you to fill me full of cum. Also, I love you. Like, how fucking rich is that scenario, you know? Like, how fulfilling is that? And I wanted that for Seahorse Boy.
It also,
I love that for Seymour's.
One of my fantasies, I will admit, as a working woman, is just like, oh, someone else is pregnant for me. I don't have to deal with this crap. Like, that's really attractive to me.
Yeah, I know
we've talked a lot today. Oh yeah, he's ready and enthusiastic.
Yeah,
for that role.
Are you saying that one? Yeah, talked a lot about like, I know we've spoken a lot about like gender, like shouldn't matter and stuff like that. But I think as somebody who enjoys the inversion of gender roles, mm-hmm. I think it's fun to like have them established so that you can subvert them. I guess, right?
Like, yeah, it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, like understand the rules so you know when and how to break them.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, yeah, like there's like there's two different, I think there's two different ways definitely to like play around with gender. There's kind of like deliberately like obfuscating it and like doing, yeah, like A for A and kind of just like not ignoring it, but like kind of transcending it. And then there's also, yeah, like establishing it and then playing with its boundaries. And I think both ideas are very valid.
Yeah, that's interesting because
it's... Yes.
Go ahead,
Anna. I'm so sorry, Nat. Yeah, but Betty, I love that. Like, yes, gender play can be either affirming or erasing. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. is equally powerful depending on your audience, right? Mm-hmm. I love that. You're absolutely right.
Or like the opposite of affirming is also equally valid, I think.
Absolutely.
Right. I think, no, but the opposite is still affirming if that's the outcome, right? Like, I've definitely degraded the ever-living fuck out of people in order to make them know that their identity is valid.
Mm-hmm, because to be degraded, you have to be acknowledged, right? Like,
exactly, for who you are.
Yeah. And starting with character-first writing, which we talked at the beginning of the podcast about, this was actually helpful for me because it's getting me to realize, like, I generally, sometimes I'm surprised or I change it if, like, the sexual acts are all nondescript. But I do know when I'm going in if I want to work on a for A script or an F4 script or an M4 script. And since I don't typically know the sexual acts as well going in, I just know the idea and the character. I think the reason I often know the gender is because I know whether or not I'm trying to erase a gender stereotype or subvert it. And it's really useful for me to understand why I start from that place. So thank you, Betty. That was awesome.
You're welcome. I've been known to have good ideas every decade or so.
You are a veritable font of good ideas, Bats.
Thanks, Hannah. You're the best.
Honestly, the seahorse boy is the only male animal I think, check by biology, you can get pregnant is a great place to play with gender expectations.
Speaking absolutely. Of the biology,
so there are like frogs and stuff, that can experience spontaneous parthenogenesis, especially in a sexual fashion. Where like, honestly,
hot.
Okay, let me just use this as a jumping off point to be like, Jurassic Park is awesome. Because they made a bunch of like female dinosaurs that were like dino DNA spliced with amphibian DNA, and also they made them lysine dependent, but like because they needed to breed like evolutionarily, and also like because it's hot, right?
It's hot, yeah.
they change, and that's because of the sexual dimorphism parthenogenesis that like basically like a lot of reptiles including frogs experience. Like if you have a pond full of, for some crazy evolutionary reason, all male frogs, they can, depending on the species, change their fucking sexuality or their sexual markers in order to propagate their species. And so that's really hot.
Do you realize how easy that would be to get into male-dominated spaces if they just started turning into women? Some
species. Avalon, yeah.
Be great.
Is that why frogs are like a bisexual icon?
Yeah, some species.
I actually didn't know the reason behind it.
See, I thought that it was just because they're cute.
I thought it was just like somebody was like, frogs are cute, and then that was it.
It definitely is because they're cute, but it's also because of sexual dimorphism and parthenogenesis.
That's
amazing.
Very interesting.
Nice. That's amazing.
I learned something new today. I was going to ask about the biology of Seahorse Boy.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes, let's talk about the biology of Seahorse Boy.
So you did mention that you did a lot of research for this. So I think you kind of answered most of this question, but I still want to ask. Did you go from how much of this was like you went from your idea to like finding out facts about seahorses, or like how much of it was like you found out about seahorses and then like wanted to write the script?
I mean, I had pegged. Fucking sorry, I'm gonna ugly laugh tackle right into the mic. Yes, no, I love boys that are breedable, to be honest. Like, I'm not saying that in an incendiary way.
Looking submissive, like, and breedable. Imsa, thanks, man.
No, seriously, like, a submissive that you can fuck and get pregnant is hot as hell. And I knew that frogs did that, and I knew that seahorses carried their young, like the male carried them in their pouch, and I was curious to learn more. And because Sprung was interested and excited and diving into that with me, I kind of did a little bit of live research, and we talked more about like how the character would act, I guess. In our planning session, because he was pretty on board with like, whatever you're right, you know, I trust you, which is nice, but it's also because I've been around for a long time. And counter warning, don't trust someone just because they've been around for a long time. Yeah. but yeah, you know, he and I had a lot of positive interactions before that. So I basically like got the shape of what the character was supposed to be like from him. And then I went and researched a bunch of stuff. So, in the seahorse script, like the number of babies that they
have.
Yes.
The, basically, like everlasting bond that they're going to have, like a lifetime.
Oh, that's awesome. No way. Oh my God. That's hilarious. I remember that. Have you seen it in the, it's in the Into the Spider-Verse movie where it's like, do you know that seahorses mate for life?
They do.
Yeah, that's so cute. Oh my God.
I could probably do a lobster one at some point if I didn't like things with like crustaceous tails so much.
I understand.
It's just not my thing. But I also like that when I researched, I found out that male seahorses go into as I mentioned before, like basically a version of sub frenzy. Like they get really fucking excited and they want to be bred. Like they are literally submissive and breedable and excited. And like
submissive and breedable.
This is the best thing I've heard that octopi talks at like the people and tell like the female octopi to go fuck themselves. So
yes. So octopi, oh God, please have me on in a whole separate podcast and I will write an octopus script just to have this exact conversation, but in a octopus scenario, because they're one of my favorite animals. Seahorses, I just dipped a tail into, right? And basically like all the facts in the script are very real. I would not include them if they were not actual facts. And I also just wanted him to be very needy because, like, if you're swimming around and you see a lot of other seahorses and you're just kind of always wondering which one will be my mate for life, and then you finally find them, how happy are you going to be?
That's like, so cute.
Oh, my God. Right? And so that's basically where we drop them in is, like, he's needy, he's hot, he's cute, he's dedicated. And he's ready to bear babies. And like, oh my God, is there anything better?
Is there? Because I can't think of anything. Absolutely not. I was going to say, I have a note next to where you talk about, just think we could have anywhere from 5 to 2,500 kids. I feel like there's a whole genre of like funny scripts.
All of those numbers are definitely accurate. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't include numbers or details.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
unless they're relevant, unless they're
100% of them of the same mind. Accurate. Yeah, like, I definitely think there's like this whole subsection of funny scripts that's like educational, kind of. Or yeah, like whenever like you can take an opportunity to entertainment.
Entertainment.
I wrote a script about like a person buying like they tried to get a furry costume, but all they had was a naked mole rat costume.
I actually name your naked mole rat script as like a good example of that. I was like, that's naked mole rat script, another example of that. Also, I did the Pegged by Your Hyena Girlfriend script, which I did include a lot of hyena
facts. That one was on my list. I actually didn't perform it because you had bad, and you did such a good job.
Oh, you should. Oh, thank you. Thank you a lot. I really like doing that one, both for the hyena facts and for the dad jokes.
I mean, who doesn't like a ginormous oversized glut? I'm just saying.
You'll hear no complaint from me, absolutely.
Also, I appreciate this. Go ahead.
No, Natalie, go ahead.
I'm a huge fan of vocabulary, as some of you know, and I appreciate this script contains the great word pseudocopulation.
I was like, oh my god, that's amazing.
That took me a moment. I had to like stop and think about that one. My tiny pea brain was like, pseudo? Okay, aww. I got this.
That is a thing that I included on purpose because they included that on the biological websites that I was researching. And I was like, is it pseudocopulation if we're just fucking copulating, like literally?
Is mutual masturbation pseudocopulation?
What is pseudocopulation? Especially if you're getting each other pregnant as a result, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's not just, oh, let's rub our things together or together ish it's like, this is how we fuck. Like, science needs to readjust its perceptions on how copulation, sex, gender, reproduction, everything functions. I mean, you all know this.
Yeah.
Okay, so the definition I looked up, just out of curiosity, which I'm sure isn't the only definition, but, you know, I Googled for like 5 seconds, is pseudocopulation. Attempted copulation by a male insect with a flower that resembles a female carrying pollen. So, one example of pseudocopulation is when a bee...
A flower girl and incest... insect boy script when?
Seahorse thoughts to kind of close out?
Oh, yeah. So I was going to ask, originally, my question was, where did the pet name My Mate come from? And I was wondering, now that you've talked at length about the research that you've done, was that a research-driven pet name as well? Like the mating for life kind of thing?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
I like things that make sense in context, I would say. So, like, if I write a script, the terms that are used in either direction or in any direction for people that are involved are pretty fluid, depending on what someone wants to get out of it. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I mean, God, Seahorse Boy is so fucking cute. I would love him to be just...
Sorry, that was Emma.
Very submissive. No, I love that map. And very obedient and very attentive. Because as the male of the species, he can't actually propagate the species, but he can do his best. I struggled not to say his best. To propagate the species and get people to actually give back to that. And that's kind of what it takes in seahorses, right? Like, they have to be willing to hang with you for life and let you be pregnant. And you have to be willing to carry the burden.
I love that. Yeah, I struggle a lot with finding pet names because a constant struggle of mine is like, what if the listener doesn't like being called this? So I really like that he was kind of like, fuck it. Like, this is like my vision for it. And he just went for it. And I like that a lot. Maybe that could be a good tip for anybody listening as well. It's just like, don't stress out so much about. Like, if you like a pet name and you think it's going to work, then just go for it, right?
I would encourage you to take your own advice, Avalon.
Yeah.
Don't stress. Just do it.
No stresses.
No stress. And stress on anything. Zero stress. In general. Right? Like, just put your shit out there for people that you think want to hear it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the jam, absolutely. Right?
Did you have a setting in mind for this, just out of curiosity? Because I really liked the domesticness of it. Something that I like to talk about, I don't remember if we talked about it on the podcast, but off the line, I always talk to Shauna about this. Shauna is also a very, monster girl, writer. A very monster girl writer. That's not how words work. He's a big fan of writing Monster Girl, and I really like how one thing that I noticed about both this script and a lot of Shauna's scripts that I've read are that, like, the monster is, while it may be like the focus of a script, it's still like the, it's like a vessel for a feeling, right? And your whole thing was wanting to take the seahorse boy, and he's a vessel for that feeling of like, wouldn't it be great if you could come home and like there's just like the, your submissive breedable boy like waiting to be, you know, filled up by you and stuff like that. But something that was really interesting was that domesticness, which I really liked. But in order for there to be like that kind of domesticness, right, there kind of is like a home aspect to this one. So I was wondering, did you have a specific kind of like home aesthetic for our happy seahorse couple in mind?
I did, honestly. Like, I would love them to go home to like a little like coral hut at the bottom of the ocean. Oh, and like have it be so cute. And honestly, I really like that you asked that. Because even if I do terrible things to my characters or my quote unquote protagonists, like, I still want them to have nice things, or at least experience nice things. And that's why I write them from a kink perspective. So, like, no, that's fucking cute. And I would love them to be totally, like, sociologically and familially enriched in their bonds. I mean, obviously, yeah, ideally.
I'm picturing, like, the house from Luca, like, the underwater house from Luca. I don't know if anybody has seen that.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, well, they have, like, a house. It's, like, it's not a coral hut. It's, like, in, like, a cave and, like, the rocks, like, in underwater. But it's basically, like, a house. It's just, like, they have chairs and, like, a table and, like, everything. And that's just what I'm picturing. It's, like, an underwater house, basically.
Yeah, because there's bubble noises in this too, right? So I was like, oh, so it's like a distinctly like underwater kind of thing.
Yeah.
I got very, in like a good way, like very like SpongeBob SquarePants vibes, where I was like, oh, like I want them to have like a little clam-shaped bed and like stuff. Aww, like that.
That's so cute. Yeah, that's adorable.
Yeah, basically. And that's really nice.
It is. Yeah. It is really nice. That might be a great note to end it on.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you once again for joining us here on the Writer's Block podcast. Any last words from anybody?
We really appreciate all the feedback you guys leave us in the comments. We try to
get thank you so much.
Possible. We are still in the process just because there was some finagling last week, which is totally okay. We want to work around our guest schedules. Yeah. We don't know who exactly is going to be on deck next, but we'll let you know as soon as we do. We might know by the time we actually post this. But otherwise, please keep sending in those questions and comments and suggestions, because we love all of them. Also, somebody, by the way, Evelyn said you were really, really cute. So,
what, me?
Yeah, they pulled out you specifically. This is slander,
lies and slander.
So. Oh my god! Don't even start with me. Somebody also said all of us are cute. So.
That is true. But that one was less embarrassing because it applied to all of us. So I went.
Oh my god. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on, Hannah. You're the best. You're the best. Yes, we have to collab sometime. The script was great. Had a great time. And thank you so much for joining us. So we'll see you next week, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.